The following Absolutely paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back. It's that Thursday again, which means that during the first hour, we'll be doing the roundtable discussion on strength and hypertrophy acquisition with Coach Wade Johnson and, of course, Rob Regish, author of The Blueprint. And I know a lot of you who are looking on Facebook or at the byline of this show, it says showing respect to the dead. And you probably think we're going to be talking about powerlifters who have passed. Nope, you're wrong. We're going to be talking about the deadlift. In my humble opinion, the single most important lift. I call this one for you ladies out there who are just about to tune out. Wait a minute. Give me a second. Okay? I call this one the nursing home buster, because if you can deadlift into your older age, you'll never end up in a nursing home. Just ask Judy Madsen. Okay. Second hour, we are joined by Adele Musa, science writer extraordinaire for the Subversity Science Roundup. And that's during the second hour. So stay tuned for that. Okay. So let's get right to it. Waste no more time. Welcome back to the show, Coach Wade Johnson.
Always good to be with you guys.
And, of course, Rob Regish, who is a regular here on the Super. We're thinking of changing the name from the Superhuman Radio Network to Superhuman Radio Conglomerated with Rob Regish Network. How you doing,
God
Rob?
God help us all. God help us. Thanks for having me back, bro.
Absolutely. And this is a really important discussion. I got to be honest with you. And no disrespect to those who specialize in one lift or the other. I believe, in my humble opinion, that the deadlift is the greatest example of overall strength that can be done in one single lift that taxes the entire body. Am I off base on that, Wade?
I think it depends on the person. I think it's one of those, but it, for me, you know, I've always considered squat to be the king, but deadlift is something that's really challenging in the aspect that when you called me about the show and we talked about it, you know, it's the one movement, you know, that you don't have an eccentric and concentric movement in, you know, so to give you an idea of the level of lift that it is, think of, you know, doing the bench press where you have spotters hand you the weight by putting it on your chest and then the bench press begins, or, you know, going into a squat rack and starting below parallel, you know, without that initial movement,
right?
You know, and so, you know, therein lies where it makes it an extremely, extremely difficult lift. The basic premise is simple, but it is a very, very difficult lift to master and do well.
Well, now I'm not picking on you, Wade, because you'd kick my ass. But let's look at you for a second. You have a respectably over 1,000-pound squat. You've got a very respectable bench press, but whenever you talk about the deadlift, you always prerequisite the statement by saying that you don't have a freaky grip. So, you know, you're because it's almost like this is one of the lifts in my humble opinion. I could be really off base on this, but you give it everything you got, but you know that there's probably more in you if you specialized in it.
That remains to be seen. It's one of those things where it's one of the lifts. It is the lift that I have struggled with the most, and that wasn't always the way that it was. It was as I became what I would consider an intermediate level lifter. And as I started to put on more size, it got more difficult to increase that lift. And probably were more for me, as opposed to it being a difficult lift physically, it is mentally something
yes.
that is very difficult. And therein lies, I think, where a lot of the trouble comes in. So it's not something that anatomically I'm built for to do well, you know, and I've had to work extremely hard to get the pull that I've got.
And you've got a 700-pound deadlift, right?
Yeah, I pulled 700 in a meet, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's really big weight to be pulling off the ground from a dead stop. Now, Rob, talking about the deadlift just a little bit more, because I want people to understand the magnitude. Wade pointed out something that is, I believe, as well. And that is, it's not sheerly all about kinetic energy and leverages. It's about mental control of the entire body, from the balls of the feet to the fingertips. You have to have so much inroad in your mental grid and your nervous system grid to activate so many muscles simultaneously to do the pull. Do you think that it's the most respectable lift out there? I mean, short of cleaning and jerking that. I mean, short of pulling that off the ground and pressing it overhead. Okay.
I will say this. In my opinion, if they were to lock me away or put me on a desert island and said you could only perform one lift for strength and size to keep or build what you have, it would be the deadlift. And looking back, you know, on my experience, especially coming from a ectomorphic background, the deadlift put more muscle on me than any other lift, and I have no reservations in saying that. No disrespect to the squat or the Olympic lifters that are going to talk about, you know, cleaning or cleans and jerks. The deadlift did more for me than any single lift. So I think that speaks volumes.
I mean, Wade, a guy who can clean and jerk, you know, 350 pounds probably could deadlift quite a bit more than that. Am I not wrong?
Oh, I would say so. When you, I'm trying to think of... the Russian lifter Chemerkin, I believe he won an Olympics, and then the next Olympics, he made an attempt of 200. See, what is it? It's 272.5 is 601 roughly, and he got it to the clean position and couldn't hold on to it. So you know, if a guy is close to doing an Olympic clean with 600 pounds, that there's no telling. You know, the guy. Is probably well north of 700, if not pulling 800 pounds.
I mean, think about that, right? Because in order to get 600 pounds ballistic, think about that.
I can't
get
even
it ballistic.
Imagine.
I mean, that's so intense. Okay, but we're not talking about that right now. We want to talk about the deadlift. What we're going to do is we're going to take an early break, because when we come back, we're going to talk about loading patterns and training styles. We're going to be talking about accessory work and what you can do to start incorporating the deadlift into your routine now. Coach Johnson, please give your websites.
You can find, I have a personal page on Facebook, and then there's a Johnson Strength Facebook page. There's also johnsonstrengthgroup.com, and you can reach me at supersquat800@yahoo.com.
Okay. And, of course, for Rob Regish, go to superhumanradio.com and click either the Blueprint banner ad or the Mass Pro Synthogen banner ad to learn more about his product. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back. I have never endorsed a training guide before The Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used The Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of The Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both The Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on the Blueprint Forum to ensure your success. Melatonin is the best sleep aid in the world, but it has one flaw, the delivery method. Melatonin tablets are not efficient and can wear off too soon, leaving you wide awake in the middle of the night. Time-release tablets make you feel groggy in the morning. Now there's the Age 4 Sustained Delivery Melatonin Patch. This transdermal patch delivers a precise amount of melatonin from the moment you apply it and continues to do so for an entire 6 hours. This ensures a full night's sleep while waking refreshed and ready to go. Visit ageforce.com and use the coupon code SHREMEL and save 50% off your first order. Go to ageforce.com and use SHREMEL today and sleep better tomorrow.
The cornerstone of longevity medicine is preserving or improving telomere length by increasing telomerase. Telomeres are the repair kit for your DNA. Maintaining DNA integrity is an important factor in staying young and disease-free. If you're like me, a telomerase activator isn't optional, it's a necessity. The only only clinically proven telomerase activator in the world is TH65. That's why I take TH65 every day, and you should too. You can learn more about TH65 by visiting tasciences.com. That's tasciences.com.
You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies, and no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechano Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides. Southern Research Company.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Just a reminder, Age 4 still has the buy one, get one free, plus free patches of their new 10-hour energy patch. Twice the energy at half the price. Go to superhumanradio.com to learn about this really cool way of adding energy to your day without drinking a lot of sugary carbs. Best of all, if you don't want the energy to continue on, you take the patch off. About 45 minutes later, it stops working. Try doing that with a drink. All right. We're talking with Coach Wade Johnson and Rob Regish. We're talking about the deadlift. In my humble opinion, a very important lift, especially for you women out there. Okay, Coach, how do you train your athletes in the deadlift? How frequently do you deadlift? What are the loading patterns and set and rep schemes typically?
We pull every week. I think one of the things that has become a detriment, or why the standard has changed from pulling every week in the last, say, 10 years, is I think because people train the lift just too heavy. You know, the taxing part, you know, on your lower back after you've trained your squat earlier in the week, you know, tends to lead to overtraining. So one of the things that we've done is we have pulled back from pulling so heavy so frequently, and we incorporate a few things differently on the front end of our deadlift session. We warm up and start with the front squat, and that has done tremendous things for me with my form, whether I have pulled sumo or conventional. And then from there, we pull with a trap bar, and we use a raised handle trap bar. So we're actually a little bit further away from the floor than the typical conventional bar on the floor. And ergonomically, you know, you're developing pulling power without the strain of your hands being at your, you know, at your side with an alternating grip or or even a hook grip, which I use when I pull from the floor, you know, so you've got that inverted grip. So it's something that ergonomically is very natural, and that's where we really work hard at, you know, because you're going to be able to pull more weight with that raised handle trap bar, and that's where we really work on developing our pulling power. And then we use most of the flat pull, you know, the on the floor with the regular bar is where we mainly work on form and speed. We do a few finishing movements that, you know, that will vary from time to time based on the lifter, but the bulk of our training, the protocol is front squats, trap bar, and then pull from the floor for form.
Okay, now, Rob, the deadlift, should it be the kind of movement where you're doing high reps with? A lot of people lose their form, and we're going to talk about form in a moment, but a lot of people lose their ability to maintain their form in the higher reps. Or is it simply something that, you know, you've got to relegate yourself to the, you know, maybe 12 and under rep scheme?
That's a great question. There's no question in my mind that the deadlift is a low rep exercise, meaning you're absolutely right. You know, once somebody starts to progress into the higher rep ranges, and I'll define that as anything above 8 repetitions, form starts to deteriorate. It's just so much of a mental concentration exercise where the central nervous system is engaged heavily. You know, you risk little form errors, and if life is a game of inches, deadlifting is a game of centimeters. And if you don't believe that, you know, let the bar slip out of the groove on you, whether you're using a heavy weight or not, and God forbid, but you're going to wind up with a back injury. And, you know, that's my point. It's hopefully
okay,
you don't
stay there, because I have another question I want to come back with, but I just want to go to Wade real quick. Wade, what do you think? Low rep scheme, high rep scheme when focusing on the deadlift, for, you know?
I like a lower rep scheme, and I'll tell you why, because it's one of those things where, you know, and I agree with Rob. I mean, it's one of those things where that particular movement and the squat, you know, once you get past a couple of reps, the form degradation, it just skyrockets. So what we've done, as opposed to doing a bunch of sets and a bunch of reps, we'll do singles and shorten the rest interval and really work on form, being explosive, you know, and making sure that the form is correct. Where we do any type of reps at all is usually with assistance. We don't do a bunch of reps with the front squat. The most we'll ever do in a working set is a triple, and usually the same for the trap bar. But a lot of times, we stay in the 1 to 2 rep range. And when we're pulling from the floor, we really focus on the form and just use a shorter rest interval, because once you start, you know, bouncing those plates and things like that, it gets very, very difficult to maintain your form.
Okay, now stay where you are for a second. Rob, explain briefly the difference between conventional and sumo stance in the deadlift.
Okay. Conventional stance is typically you'll see somebody approach the bar with a shoulder width or perhaps slightly less than that. Foot position with the hands outside of the legs. For many people, this is, you know, this works and works well. However, the sumo variation is quite the opposite insofar as the feet are spread much further out and the hands are kept inside of the legs. And in practice, what this does really is two things. One, it shortens the bar stroke because you now have to pull the bar a far shorter distance. But secondly, by spreading the legs that far, it engages the hips much more so than the conventional form of the deadlift. And that's important because, you know, I guarantee you this. And if somebody says to me, I hurt my back doing deadlifts, I can almost, you know, 9 times out of 10, diagnose it by, you know, the answer to this question: how fast do your hips, raise when you're deadlifting? Because if they're pulling conventional and the hips come up too fast, it's weak hips. And what happens is the back then bows and picks up too much of the load. So that's the difference between conventional and sumo. There are benefits to both.
Okay.
I think, yeah.
Okay, let me intervene now. So Wade, You how do you typically deadlift now?
Right now, after the meet with the knee injury, I stayed away from sumo because it puts so much pressure on the knee injury.
I would imagine, and so on the inside of the knee, right?
Yeah, and so I've gone back to pulling conventional, and, you know, from the meet up until May, when I started training to get ready to train for this meet, I've been pulling conventional, you know, and I've been pulling without gear and beltless.
Okay, so, let me ask you a question. Is it clearly just a matter of preference and choice, or are there some people, because of their anatomical makeup and kinesiology of their body, that they should just go right to the sumo, or they should just go right to a conventional pull?
I think that that it's very specific to the lifter. I've got several guys that lift raw, and a lot of times you would think that the raw lifter will respond mostly to the conventional pull. But I have one in particular, and he's a lightweight. He's a 148 lifter, and when he pulls conventional, he is in all sorts of different kind of difficulties. So we put him out. His stance is wider than mine, pulling sumo, and it is a much, much more natural lift for him. So, it's one of those things where when I have a new lifter, you know, I'll watch him pull and see, you know, what's going on mechanically, and we'll make the switch, you know, if it looks like that's what they need to do.
Now, we're going to just talk about this briefly, and then we're going to get back into the mechanics, but just from a competition standpoint. I've always had a problem with the ability to go from sumo to conventional. I can't really find an analogy in the squat or the bench press because you have set starting points in those. You got to start with, you know, while you're standing up in the squat, and clearly you couldn't start halfway down and that would be no advantage. And you can't, you know, start halfway down in the bench press because clearly that wouldn't be any advantage. I guess the analogy would be, you know, if you can't even get your arms really wide in the bench press to try to take this advantage because you still have to take the bar off the pins unless they're going to bring the pins down 2 inches from your chest. But my frustration or my dismay about this lift is that the sumo is treated the same way as the conventional. Clearly, I mean, just sheerly from a physics standpoint, the conventional lifter is working way harder than the sumo lifter. Am I off base, Wade?
I wouldn't say that you're off base. What I would say is having pulled, you know, both, and naturally, as far as, you know, when I'm without any equipment, belt or anything, I'm a much better conventional puller. But now I can put on gear, you know, and when my knees are healthy, you know, I can pull a hell of a lot of weight off the floor, you know, pulling sumo.
Okay.
So I think both of them require it, the amount of work that, you know, that it requires is significant. But I think you've got a point to where when you look at strongman competitions, they simply don't allow the sumo pull. If you do any type of, you know, any of the pulling that they do, whether it be, you know, from blocks or, you know, a machine or anything like that, they must always use the conventional stance to the point, when I competed in the Music City Strongman, Dionne Wessels would watch the width. If it got past what she felt like was a little more than shoulder width, she wouldn't allow the stance.
Yeah, that's good. What about you, Rob? What is your opinion of the sumo versus the conventional? Do you think that there's an unfair advantage in the sumo lift?
I don't know if I'd call it an unfair advantage. I think it boils down to individual, you know, body leverages. There are just some people that lift better conventional and some people that lift better sumo. I think the point being is you need to find which stance suits you best and then identify if you are somebody, and this is a key point I want to make. There are people seem to fall into two groups. People that get stronger deadlifting more, just using, meaning the deadlift variations, or people that get stronger using the assistance exercises and not necessarily deadlifting with the bar as frequently. Yeah.
Okay, so give me a prescription for a newbie. Let's say we have a woman out there or a guy out there who's not deadlifted before. They want to start deadlifting. Obviously, we can't prescribe the weight that they start out with because that's an individual thing. But what kind of routine would you prescribe for somebody who's just getting started in the deadlift? And then when we're done with that discussion, I want to go back to Wade and talk a little bit about form. So go ahead.
What I recommend is pulling 3 times a month, meaning about once every 10 days for somebody that's new. And I structure it as follows: light, medium, and heavy. Now, your light day, we're talking about 10 sets of 3 with about 45 seconds in between sets. You're using about 50% of your one rep max, and you're pulling for speed. You're moving that bar as quickly as possible. The second day is your medium day. I'll call it your medium day, but it's deadlifting off of a block or from a deficit in a 5x5 format. A little bit longer rest in between sets, you know, 3 minutes or more. to build the bottom of the lift, which for a lot of people is difficult to get the bar. You know, if you can't get the bar off the floor and moving, you're not going anywhere. So we work that. And then the third day and final day of the month is your heavy day. You know, that's where you're going to be pulling in the 90th percentile or greater for three or fewer reps. So you got a light, a medium, and a heavy day. And it goes back to the old saying, if you're going to be good at something, you need to practice. The deadlift is one of those lifts, however, where you can't lift heavy all the time. And that's how you get around it, light, medium, heavy.
Okay, now Wade, and then we're going to talk about accessory work in a moment. Is there a way to illustrate verbally what the proper form should be for a lifter? Or does it vary by, you know, the length of your femur and how your hips are built and so on and so forth?
Oh, I think so. I think absolutely the latter. I mean, it's one of those things where I think it's more, the deadlift is more about an individual in how they're built versus the squat even and the bench press.
Okay, with that being said, and I'm sorry to rush you through this, but I'm trying to.
No, not at all.
Okay, with that being said, are there any hard and fast rules? Like, I've seen guys deadlifting, and I've always said, don't let your legs move and your back stays down there. Don't let your butt come up first. Your lower back has to stay locked, and you need to unfold like one of those old fashioned wooden extension rulers that the carpenters used to use. What I see is a lot of guys, the bar is on the floor, their legs are straightened out already, their ass is almost up above their back,
right,
and then they start pulling. Are there any hard and fast things that you would tell people to stay away from?
Well, you know what, here's the first thing that I would say, and I see this happen a lot. I judge so many lifters, and when they approach the bar, especially conventional pullers, their toes a lot of times are straight ahead. And that is a tremendous mistake. What happens where you'll see the difficulty is, one, is keeping the fanny down, and then two, once the weight gets above the knees, there's no place for that groin to push through where you can really drive the hips. That sounds ridiculous until you have a load, especially a max attempt, or even anything at 90% and above. Once you get it above the knees, when the feet are straight, it locks that groin down. So I always use, you know, as a starting point to see if you're comfortable, put those toes at 11, you know, the left foot at 11, the right foot at 1 o'clock. I prefer a little bit more, you know, more to 10 to 10:30 and 1:30 to 2, and that will help you open up that groin. When you start to head towards lockout, that makes a tremendous, tremendous difference. And don't flex the arms. When you're pulling, you know, that tendency is to pull and flex those arms. And that's where that can be catastrophic, especially
a bicep.
You know,
you can snap a bicep, right?
Absolutely.
And I felt the pain of that. I felt the pop one day and I thought I did that and I didn't, but my bicep muscle hurt me for about 2 weeks after that. Rob, any caveats that you have? Look, like Wade just gave a really good point. Toes out. That applies to everybody. Anything that would apply to everybody other than keep your fanny down? Is there anything else that you want to tell people? If you start deadlifting, it's all a matter of, you know, your personal body type, but this is a hard and fast rule.
Be wary of the hips rising too fast. That is the single biggest mistake and form flaw that I see. So in order to remedy that, understand that when the hips are weak like that, you need to strengthen them, and there are three exercises that do it exceptionally well.
Okay, I don't want to give any accessories right this second. We're going to come back and do accessory work.
Okay.
So for you, it's don't let the hips come out first.
Right.
Okay.
The hips come up, fly up, and then you're in trouble.
Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the accessory work that will help make you stronger in this very, very important lift, especially for you ladies who are listening to the show right now. The deadlift is scary. A lot of people think it's awkward. It starts out awkward, but once you get it down, you will fall in love with this lift. You'll want to show your girlfriends that you can deadlift. And Judy Madsen is over 70 years old, I believe, and deadlifts 225 pounds plus. No small feat of strength. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Let loose from the news. Let's get me hanging around.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
You already know how great the Testo 100 Transdermal Testosterone Boosting Patch is. Well, now it's even better. The new and improved Testo 100 patch now contains D-aspartic acid, stinging nettle root, and androstenotrione to increase free testosterone while reducing sex hormone binding globulin and aromatase enzyme. It's still made in FDA-certified labs and contains all the great ingredients that made it work originally. But now it's even better, bypassing the stomach to deliver its ingredients throughout the day for greater increases in energy, libido, and muscle-building, fat-burning effects. Get 50% off when you use the coupon code SHR4. Go to AGEFORCE.com and use the coupon code SHR4 and get your new Testo 100 patch today.
You may not recognize Muscle Gauge Nutrition, but that's because they've been in the background as a private label manufacturer for some of your favorite brands. Now get ready to hear their name a lot as an introductory offer. Get 5 pounds of pure whey protein isolate for as little as $11 a pound and get free shipping too. Each 30-gram scoop contains the requisite amount of leucine to stimulate the anabolic response. Check out these flavors: cake batter, chocolate, cinnamon bun, ice cream sandwich, Rocky Road, strawberry, vanilla, and unflavored. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad and use the coupon code SUPER. That's S-U-P-E-R today. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today. Want hardcore legal gear? Check out MrSups.com. MrSups.com carries only the best pro hormones, raw powders, and post-cycle products around. MrSups.com can deliver the goods, and no one beats MrSups.com on hardcore, barely legal pro hormones, because MrSups.com is the source. You get wholesale prices by cutting out the middleman. Don't waste your hard-earned money. Go to MrSups.com today and compare for yourself. You won't be disappointed. MrSups.com. That's MrSups.com. Cutting-edge products at wholesale prices. Mass Pro Synthogen is unlike any supplement to come before it, both in form and function. Synthogen is the world's first messenger RNA translation accelerator. Messenger RNA is the rate-limiting step in growing new muscle. Synthogen rapidly stimulates protein synthesis on demand, day or night. Synthogen allows you to train harder, longer, stronger, and more frequently than your competition. Synthogen is the absolute fastest drug-free recovery agent available. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Synthogen banner ad to learn more. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Second hour of the show, we have Adele Moussa joining us for the Subversity Science Roundup. Great stuff we're going to be talking about. Right now we're talking with Coach Wade Johnson and Rob Regish about the deadlift. Okay, I'm going to start out with Coach Johnson. What kind of assistance work is important in order to increase the deadlift?
For me, this is what I use. I happen to have a reverse hyper. I think that is a great machine to assist both the deadlift and the squat. I do a lot of stiff leg deadlifts with a kettlebell, and that's where I do a lot more reps. I don't go exceptionally heavy. The biggest kettlebell I have is a 88-pound kettlebell, and I'll, as a finishing movement, do 3 sets of 12 with that.
Both hands holding the kettlebell, or just
yes.
One? Okay.
Yes, both hands.
Okay.
And we also use kettlebell swings. Again, it's a very simple movement. You can YouTube it and see tons, you know, videos. We'll do that as, you know, we use it in warm-up, but we'll also use it in finish, as a finishing movement. The other thing I like to do to pull a little more weight is I'll do some stiff leg deadlifts with the barbell and some Zercher squats. And but again, I keep the weight moderate, and I will keep the rep ranges, you know, about 3 to 5 reps, usually about 3 sets. And that's basically all I do.
Okay, and so you do that on the days that you don't pull or on the days you pull?
I do. I will just to quickly go over it. I warm up. I use the front squat and then the trap bar deadlift, and we'll pull for form from the floor. And then I'll use a couple of movements. A lot of times it's the kettlebell deadlift and reverse hyper, but then depending on the day, depending on time constraints, I usually will follow up once we pull for form from the floor. I'll use 1 to 2 movements after that, and it'll vary. Stiff leg deadlift, the Zercher squat, things of that nature. And then we will also use accommodating resistance, whether it be bands. Most of the time, I will do a mini cycle, like 3 or 4 weeks of pulling with chains as well when I pull from the floor.
Okay, Rob Regish, accessory work to help support your gains in the deadlift.
You know, there were 3 movements that when I started to hit these hard, my deadlift skyrocketed. So the first being deadlifts from a block or from a deficit. That always helped.
Okay, let's be very clear about that. Deadlift from block, some people think you mean put the barbell up on block so you're pulling shorter.
No.
You're standing on a block, so the deadlift, the bar is even further down, so you're pulling for a greater distance.
Yeah, it increases the range of motion, and the practical effect being you're able to pull off the floor much easier. So it's something you need to go slow with, but that's definitely one of them. The second, standing ab work. You know, a lot of people forget we're all talking about pulling and rowing movements and movements for the back. Abs, man. And if you think about it, it's so much more so important to do this, especially on the deadlift. If you're looking for a good ab movement, here's one that's going to benefit your deadlift tremendously. Attach a handle. I like to use one of those V handles that you use on a seated cable row.
Right.
To a high pulley, either on a cable crossover machine or a lat pull down, and standing and holding that behind your head, crunch forward, with as much weight as you possibly can, because your abs transfer all of the power that's coming from your lower to your upper body and vice versa. It's been said before, if you put a pillow where your abs are, the power is not going to transfer. Your lower back's going to pick up all the slack, but replace that with a steel block. That's what you should be doing, working the abs. And the third movement, very simply, it's little talked about and a little unorthodox, but suspending a bar from chains in the power rack, you sneak underneath it, and you squat from the bottom position up. And now let's think about this. The deadlift is a concentric-only lift. There is no stretch reflex like you see in the squat. There's no lowering of the bar. In order to get better at it, one of the exercises that I do, and this is in particular for the hips, is a wide stance, bottoms up squat. Again, suspended from chains, not from the pins on the rack, because you lose the three-dimensional sway of the bar. It's got to be from chains, in my opinion.
I like that. That's a good point. You're right. Because once the bar comes off the pins, you find out that it's really not centered where you want it. And now you're in trouble.
It's a mess. The chains are fantastic. And moving from, you can do that same thing with a good morning, if you will. But I think a lot safer movement, and one that's going to benefit you even more so, is a bottoms up squat.
Okay. All right. So we've laid out the how to squat, how often to squat, what kind of rep ranges you should shoot for, what kind of accessory work needs to be done. This is a primer for the squat, more so for people who have not, I'm sorry, the deadlift. Excuse me. Why didn't one of you guys correct me?
I don't know where he's going, but I'm going to go ahead and go on for the ride and see what happens.
The last thing I heard was the squat from the chain, so there I was, okay?
Right.
But anyway, the deadlift is a really, really critical move for everybody to learn. And don't think that it's just for strong men and power lifters. This is one of those movements that really is functional strength. So I hope more people give it a shot. And if you haven't deadlifted in a while, maybe you should work it back into your routine periodically. So there you go. And obviously you can contact both of these guys on Facebook if you want questions. And like Wade always says, send videos if you think you're doing something wrong, because otherwise there's no way for him to tell, what you're talking about. Okay. With that being said, how the hell are you doing, Coach Johnson, in your deadlift as you near December and a competition?
Well, I am still in recovery mode from, I think we talked about it on air about a month ago, probably the next to the last week of the previous training cycle. We had a mishap,
mm-hmm.
and where I went down with 880 pounds in the squat, and I am still not quite right. That being said,
is it your knee? Is it your knee that's bothering you? Because didn't the bar slap you in the back of the leg or something like that too?
No, it never hit me. The safeties caught it, and you know, so, and I will advise everyone and implore them, if you know, if you're in a squat rack, always use the safeties. If you happen to be fortunate enough to own a monolift or train where there is a monolift, invest the $100. I don't even think it's $100 in the nylon safety straps or get chain or whatever it takes, because 880, you know, there, once it starts going, there's no stopping it. And we just didn't have enough spotters that day, but it just the, you know, it torquing me and shooting me into the front of the monolift, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, it just a fluke kind of thing, you know. And so I'm still a little bit tender in the lower back and hips, and in my right knee. That's been an issue for quite some time now. And so, but, you know, all the lifts are going well. As far as, you know, looking at the goals that I set out when I started, I think they're going to be obtainable, as, you know, as long as everything is sound come meet day. So.
And you really made progress a lot faster. So even if you slowed down now, it's not like as though you're off track.
No. And again, I trained 16 weeks when the training cycle started, the week that Julia and I returned from our honeymoon. So it was early May, and I trained for 16 weeks, and that was to basically get myself, you know, acclimated again to training, you know, hard and training heavy and in the equipment. And so then I'm finishing the second week of the meat cycle. And so, you know, everything as far as numbers, I'm in good shape.
Okay.
So it looks like, you know, squatting 900, benching 600, and deadlifting 600 are definitely on tap. And okay. Then for those that are interested, this weekend, Julie and I will leave Friday. We're going to spend the night with my son in Knoxville, and then early that morning we'll drive into Johnson City, and I'm going to do my first Olympic lifting meet. There are no expectations. I'm not clean and jerking 300 pounds or anything like that. I'm going to go extremely light, and that way I can kind of seamlessly do this meet and go right back to training for the December meet. But I want to be exposed to that group of people, as I'm getting more involved in other things other than just competing. So, we're going to try that and see how that goes as well.
Okay. Funny story. And then we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and want to answer Swarup Tibby's question. The very first meet that I ever spotted in powerlifting was one that was held at Jeff Rui's gym, Powerhouse Gym in Louisville, Kentucky. And Wade and his crew came up from Tennessee to both officiate, and he brought his monolift with him. And I'll never forget this. And I don't remember if I asked you, because we're talking about the deadlift and we're talking about the importance of spotters. And I don't know if I asked you or your son, Wes, but when the guys were deadlifting at the end of the competition, we moved to the deadlift, and I said to somebody, how do I spot the deadlift? Was it you? I think it was Wes, and he looked at me and goes, no, you don't have to spot it. They just drop it if they can't hold it. And I was like, oh, wait, yeah right, that's
well,
right.
What we have done, and Wes has done this many times, it's not like you have to be there to catch the weight or anything, but when I was running meets all the time, and back then when, you know, at that meet, you know, was APA meet, when I ran those meets, we would have one of the guys that was loading or using the deadlift helper would stay at the back of the platform, because the big danger is that someone starts to pull and they topple over backwards. So, you know, you just to have a hand, you know, if they start falling back, you know, just enough to pull, you know, push them forward and get the weight down. But I now that you've mentioned it, I recall when you, because you were looking at us quizzically, like, you
like,
know, how in the hell do I take care of this?
Yeah, because
you know?
I knew how to spot the bench press, and I knew what we had to do for the squat. But then I was like, and I think it was you. I don't know if it was you or Wes, but and really polite, like didn't say, "What are you stupid?" It was like, "No, no, they just let drop the weight if they can't do it." I was like,
"Yeah,
oh,
that would
yeah,
have been that was
right.
Wes."
All right, we're gonna take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're gonna answer Swarup Tibby's question to the roundtable discussion panel. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
I've created a monster, cause nobody wants to see Marshall no more. They want Shady, I'm chopped liver. Well, if you want Shady, this is what I'll give you. A little bit of weed mixed with some hard liquor, some vodka that'll jumpstart my heart.
Summer is here. You need help quick. You need the 21-Day Beachbody Challenge from 21dayfit.com. Want muscle? Want chiseled abs? Want to feel great about your body? Then go to 21dayfit.com today and get the results you want in 21 days. From body of work icon Sean Phillips to you, this results-driven 21-minute program for 21 days gives you foolproof success, and it's free. Go to 21dayfit.com and start today, and your abs are on the way. That's the number 21dayfit.com, and download the Summer Supercharge immediately. Want hardcore legal gear? Check out MrSups.com. MrSups.com carries only the best pro hormones, raw powders, and post-cycle products around. MrSups.com can deliver the goods, and no one beats MrSups.com on hardcore, barely legal pro hormones, because MrSups.com is the source. You get wholesale prices by cutting out the middleman. Don't waste your hard-earned money. Go to MrSups.com today and compare for yourself. You won't be disappointed. MrSups.com. That's MrSups.com. Cutting-edge products at wholesale prices.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low, low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com.
I have never endorsed a training guide before the Blueprint by Rob Regish. The Blueprint combines the best techniques for building muscle and gaining strength with the best tips on supplementation and nutrition. Everyone who has used the Blueprint has surpassed their expectations in muscular gains in record time. You'll learn how to break through any plateau, how to make gains from every single workout, and all for the price of a single supplement purchase. Get your copy of the Blueprint today by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Blueprint banner ad. Order today and get copies of both the Blueprint 2.0 and 3.0, plus ongoing support on the Blueprint forum to ensure your success.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay. This question comes from Swarup Tibby, and it's a long one. He says, "Hi, guys. I've asked Rob and Wade about elbow pain in the bottom of the bench press as well as exploding off the bottom. I've applied some of their tips and no longer have pain in my elbows at the bottom, and have continued to go up in strength. Thank you very much for those tips." It's always nice to find out that people, A, apply what you talk about, and then, B, it has some beneficial effect, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, great to hear from you.
Okay, he says, "My question now is, I'm having trouble in the top half of the bench press. I really need to refine my assistance work in order to continue to gain strength in the bench press. Wade, how do you use the decline bench press? What rep and set ranges do you use? And I know you use it on a separate bench day. If you only had one bench day, I'm sorry, this print is small. I should have made it larger. If you only have one bench day, how would you use the decline bench press? And what else would you guys recommend for assistance for the top half of the bench press? All right, so we'll start with Wade.
If you have one day to train the bench and you're wanting to use the decline press to help your pressing power, simply just, you know, alternate it. In the past, and I do use two separate days, but in the past, we have gone with a 3-to-1 ratio of 3 decline sessions to 1 flat session. Now that only works if your form is sound and, you know, and you've got some experience. In this case, what I would suggest for him is use it as an assistance movement. You know, a lot of people will do a competitive bench session and then they go right to their assistance, to the machine, so on and so forth. And I think with all the lifts, that most of the time the best assistance is a variation of the lift that you're trying to become, you know, adept at. So you can, you know, use just a moderate weight. It doesn't have to be heavy if you're doing this on the same day as you're flat benching. And with the decline press to gain strength, we always move the grip in, to a medium, to a maybe narrow, not quite, you know, super close, but a medium grip. And the reason why we do that is it makes the triceps a primary mover. But we're doing it in a multi-joint movement as opposed to, you know, a bunch of press downs or skull crushers or whatever the case may be, which tend to be very, very rough on the elbows. So we use a multi-joint movement to develop the pressing power. And the great thing about the decline is by and large it takes a majority of the shoulder out of the movement. So you can really go heavy and really make those triceps the primary mover. As far as set and rep scheme, the typical template is 2 sets of 6 and then drop 20 pounds and do a set of 8. And the guide is not a loading system, you know, or a percentage or anything. It's what you can do for 6 reps. If you can do it super easy, don't do 7, 8, 9, 10 reps. Stop. Add 5 to 10 pounds the next weight. 5 reps is acceptable. If it's 4 reps or less, then the weight is too heavy. And then that way it gives you a guide, especially as you are become more experienced and you learn how your body is responding. As you're warming up, it's a better guide to where you stop. You always use your previous weight as a guide. If I, you know, for instance, this morning, I have a guy that his best 6 rep set is 265 pounds. So he wanted to make the jump to 275. He only got 4 reps. So for today and for right now, the 275 is too heavy. So we lightened the weight up and got the work in. But we'll do 2 working sets of 6 and then a drop set of 8. And then that's it. You're done pressing. So my suggestion for him would be, if he wants to incorporate the decline, is just use alternate it. 1 week do a flat bench and the next week do a decline. And sorry to be long-winded. The other thing, my bigger issue, my bigger concern still is where we were when he first asked a question, is to make sure, you know, that his form is sound. He's made some adjustments at the bottom end and his elbows aren't hurting him and he's more explosive off the chest. But I would still make sure, you know, my first impulse without seeing video is always going to lean towards, you know, what does the form look like?
Okay, Rob, what do you think?
Well, you know, first and foremost, glad that the, you know, our suggestions helped and the elbows aren't hurting anymore. But having said that, he's got a new sticking point, which means new fixes, and the fix being this. I would first perform the following exercise to find out exactly, precisely, where the bar should end up when you lock it out. And it's very simple. I walked the guy through it the other day in the gym. You take an empty bar and hold it at arm's length. Scoot down the bench a little bit. You're going to move that bar, holding it at arm's length, in an arc from a point above your waist to a point just behind your head. And you're going to continue to move it in that arc a few times. At some point in that arc, the bar is going to feel almost weightless, and it is there where the bar should end up when you lock out. Mm-hmm. Now that you know that, little piece of information, the lockout, which is your new sticking point, is relatively easy to remedy. in that exact spot, you're going to practice your lockouts on a four-board press using a close grip. Not too close, but just about where the knurling ends on the bar. I like Wade's suggestions of doubles. Would you say, Wade, six sets of doubles?
Actually, we do two sets of six, but again, it's more the decline is going to be full range, where your four board is going to be a partial. So that I would agree with you there. You know, to get your volume in with sets versus reps.
Yeah, the four board is a tremendous exercise to work your lockout. And unfortunately, you'll see a lot of guys try to press off pins for their lockout. The faulty logic there being this. You know, when the bar rests on the pins, the tension comes off your pecs. There's a reason why the boards are used, and that's because when the bar rests on those boards, the tension is built down into the pecs, the shoulders, and most importantly, the triceps. You want to make sure that you have good spotters for this exercise, even if you are performing it in a rack. And I'll tell you that because I was the guy that got pinned in the rack with some heavy lockouts on a four board. I didn't have my pin settings right. Not a nice way to go.
Yeah.
Not a nice way to go. But the four board with a close grip is a fantastic
exercise. And you know what? And you've given that piece of advice so many times. And every time you give that piece of advice about using an empty bar, going back and forth in an arc from, you know, like where your forehead is to where your midsection is, and finding that weightless point makes perfect sense when you think about it, because now you're in a groove that you're the strongest. It's your body's telling you that, because that's why you don't feel the weight anymore.
I walked the guy through it just a couple of days ago at the local gym here. It took him about all of, you know, a minute to find it, and he was like, wow. And then we started to slap a little weight on the bar, practice in that position, and he was like, holy crap.
Yeah.
You know, he's all of a sudden you're able to lift, you know, 20 pounds more in your max lift. And it's not magic. It's a form adjustment. And that's one way your body will tell you. It's a piece of biofeedback that your body can give you and say, here's where the bar should end up.
All right. We've come to the end of the show. We hope that everybody has gotten something good out of this show, a little tidbit of information that'll help you be stronger. I hope that people are inspired to try and deadlift. As Coach Johnson always talks about, if you're trying to deadlift and you're wondering if you're doing it right, have someone do a video of you, do a video with your own camera phone by sitting it next to you while you're doing it, and then send it to Coach Johnson and Rob Regish. The best way to get to you, Coach Johnson, again, please?
You can find me on Facebook. I have a personal page, and then the Johnson Strength Facebook page, johnsonstrengthgroup.com. Weightliftingdiscussion.com. We have a forum there that talks about the where people post their training, and you can always reach me at supersquat800@yahoo.com. I'm always happy to answer your questions.
And Rob Regish, other than coming to Superhuman Radio and clicking one of the banner ads for the Blueprint or Mass Pro Synthogen, how would you prefer people get in touch with you?
You know, best vehicle right now is probably facebook.com/CoachRobRegish. And I'm trying to direct all of my website traffic there, and all of the Blueprint Army knows to go there to ask questions. And even if you're not part of the Blueprint Army yet, feel free to reach out to me. I just got two new friend requests and fielded two new questions. So hopefully, like Swarup, you know, these answers are going to help you. And he's onward and upward. He's headed to Gainesville.
He's on his way to Gainesville. I like that. All right, listen, Coach Johnson, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Always good to be with you guys.
And, of course, Rob Regish, we will see you next Tuesday.
Terrific.
All right, thank you very much. All right, stay tuned. When we come back, Adele Moussa joins us for the Subversity Science Roundup, where Adele Moussa puts current science to the sniff test, and we find out who's telling the truth and who's not. Stay tuned. We're going to actually talk more about organics. We got a lot of people up in arms about the notion of eating pesticides. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
cornerstone of longevity medicine is preserving or improving telomere length by increasing telomerase. Telomeres are the repair kit for your DNA. Maintaining DNA integrity is an important factor in staying young and disease-free. If you're like me, a telomerase activator isn't optional, it's a necessity. The only clinically proven telomerase activator in the world is TA65. That's why I take TA65 every day, and you should too. You can learn more about TA65 by visiting TASciences.com. That's TASciences.com.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechanical Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Companies.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for, and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else? AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Mass Pro Synthogen is unlike any supplement to come before it, both in form and function. Synthogen is the world's first messenger RNA translation accelerator. Messenger RNA is the rate-limiting step in growing new muscle. Synthogen rapidly stimulates protein synthesis on demand, day or night. Synthogen allows you to train harder, longer, stronger, and more frequently than your competition. Synthogen is the absolute fastest drug-free recovery agent available. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Synthogen banner ad to learn more. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back. LL Cool J is definitely muscled up. He must listen to Superhuman Radio, man. Okay, welcome back to Superhuman Radio. This is the Subversity Science Roundup with Adele Musa. How are you, Adele?
I'm fine.
Good. I want to just make a statement before we get started. I put this on Facebook also this morning because I feel compelled to say this. I recently had the opportunity to talk to a fellow who tried to get on the show. He's never been on the show before, but he has a big following within the paleo community. Remember, he's never been on the show before, so it's not Rob Wolf, it's not Lauren Cordain, blah, blah, blah. And listened to a past interview of his, and he claims to have a connection to genetics. He studies genetics, but yet he does not believe that telomere length means anything at all. He just goes by how he feels, how he looks, and how he sleeps. To determine whether or not he's on the right track. And the reason I'm saying this is because of this. Adele Musa puts out a blog called Subversity.com. I can tell you that Everything that he writes about is unbiased. He has no dog in any fight. He just delivers research. And unlike all of the other quote-unquote gurus and journalists out there who are science writers, he does the complete research. He doesn't just take a press release, read it, and then regurgitate it in his own words so that he can be out there with everybody else who's saying, oh, organics aren't worth the money or whatever that case is. He actually does the hard work of reading the entire flipping study, interprets it, and then delivers the news unbiased. Not because he has an opinion, because once before he said this and now he's afraid to contradict himself. Because, folks, science is not math. At least not simple math. It's not 2 + 2 = 4. It's more like trigonometry. And if you change one trigonometric function, everything to the right of it changes. And that's how science is. Every time we learn something new, sometimes we have to go back and go, you know, I guess I was wrong about that. But too many of these gurus are afraid to say that because they don't want to follow. They don't want to lose their following. Okay. So you're very, very lucky to have Adel Moussa doing the work that he does for free. Okay. So go to subversity.com. And read the blogs. All right. I'm sorry about that, Adele. I know that you don't like when I do that, but okay.
Well, in a way, you're right. In another way, I'm also lucky that I'm not the only one, because if I was, I wouldn't have other people to talk to and to argue with me. And I really like it when I get feedback from readers who disagree with my opinion, and I always respect it. And sometimes they even have arguments that make me rethink my own position. And I'm certainly not unbiased in terms of not having certain pet peeves, that is, things I truly believe in, where the science is 50% on the left and 50% on the right, and I still stuck to my opinion that the right side, for example, is the better one. But in the end, science itself is a business that works by having always both sides, and that's very important, because once everybody would agree, or in any case where everybody is agreeing on a topic, then you just can only hope for it being the correct answer to your question, because if it was wrong, then you are totally misled, and oftentimes you build upon this hypothesis, and we have talked about this in the past in the context of the cholesterol and heart disease studies, because whenever in the past people have been doing a study on whatever subject and they found that cholesterol, total cholesterol, for example, went up, then the conclusion was that whatever they investigated must be bad for your heart. And now that the paradigm is slowly shifting, we would actually have to do all this research again and look closer. How does the exact composition of the cholesterol particles change, and so on? Therefore, it's always good to have to listen to many, not gurus, but experts with never completely unbiased, but at least in a way, people who are trying to present the data at least as unbiased as possible.
Right. Okay, so with that being said, I have a bias. I believe that organic is better than conventional simply because it has a higher probability of being devoid of, or at least very, very low in, accumulated toxins via pesticides and so on. And we did that show last week, but there's some more emerging information that you want to tell the audience?
Yeah, there was actually in the last week, shortly after we discussed that on air, another study was published which goes in a completely other direction, actually, because they do not look at the foods and what the foods do, but rather they are looking at the people who are producing those foods. And they did a study in women who work in greenhouses in, I think this is in Denmark, so it's not in a third world country where you would say that they would be using hilarious amounts of pesticides just to make the plants grow, but it's in the midst of Europe. And what they found was that the women who were pregnant while they are working in the greenhouses, they got the boys, they had not really deformed, but at least two small testicles for their age when they followed them up at the age of 5, I think, or 6 years, they realized that while everything was functioning normally at this point, and they were not hormonally, there were no hormonal problems, I suppose at this age you wouldn't really see that, the actual size of the testicles was reduced. And of course, this is a different kind of exposure, and they were acutely exposed during the pregnancy to those pesticides, but I think it does tell you something about how real those problems are. Because I still see that people always think, well, all the levels are beyond certain thresholds that have been defined by the governments, which, and this is also an interesting aspect, are different in Europe and different in the U.S., and even within Europe, you still have got different standards. So this tells you how accurate this must be. When, for example, an American citizen can be exposed to higher levels than a European one, this does tell you how exact those threshold levels must be. And in this case, this additional information of how those pesticides influence human health the other way around, before they are eaten, as a piece in the food chain, I thought that would be a quite interesting connection to what we've been talking about on the last show. And I think that if some of the listeners have followed the debate, then they will have realized that after the initial upheaval about we all have been wasting our money and organic isn't even better than conventional produce, the mass media has totally abandoned the whole topic, and in the online community there have been many more blogs like my own which have very reasonably put that into perspective. And I think this is pretty important to see that more and more people are also trying to really make up their own mind to educate themselves. And I've seen that you had reposted on the Superhuman Radio Network fan page a screenshot I've taken from one study I hit upon a few days ago, which investigated how something they called e-health literacy, that is a concept that is similar to being literate, to being able to read, but to being able to read and understand medical information on the Internet. And this was a questionnaire where they basically found out that having a high e-health literacy, as they called it, directly corresponded to being healthier. That means people who are able to really search around the Internet and who are able to inform themselves about how they can lead a healthy life, they actually were able to live healthier and were healthier.
And that's amazing, because when I started doing the show 8 years ago, and I used to have scientists and physicians, researchers on the show, and the question would always come up, you know, how in depth, how scientific can we get? And I'd say, go for it. As scientific as you would get if you were talking to a colleague, because I always believed that the audience, when they listened, if they got stuck on some concept, they would Google it, wiki it, and they would understand it. So I wanted people to become educated. I was becoming educated because I had to look this stuff up. I wanted people to as well. And there was a great thinning of the herd early on, because there were a lot of people like, well, this is way over my head. But then there were people who stuck it out and they learned. And they became autodidacts over time and so what you're saying is, makes perfect sense. It's all about being able to articulate your thoughts and being able to think your thoughts. And those who have greater vocabularies in specific areas have a greater capacity to learn.
Of course, yeah. And they also analyze for confounding factors. That is, for example, were those people who already had a higher education, or were they better off, for example, which is often an argument that is brought forward, that you are healthier when you are better off. And what they found was that there are certain connections, of course, but even if you try to make up statistically for all these confounding factors, still the actual e-health literacy was the main determinant in this case, at least. And I think this also supports the notion that it's really important to listen to radio shows like Superhuman Radio and to always maintain a critical mind. And what you just said, you really have the resources out there. You just have to know how to use them to educate yourself.
But in reality, and to kind of come full circle and end this segment on this note, you and I had this discussion about this person who I invited on the show. And then after I listened to an interview he did, he contradicted himself. He talked about how he studied genetics for the past 10 years to understand the genetic, you know, effects, but then said that he dismissed telomere length. In other words, he didn't say, well, the jury is out. The science isn't here yet. I'm not confident, but clearly telomeres do something we just don't know. He just immediately said, nah, telomere length is not important. I don't get caught up in that. And the reason I say this is because we talked about this yesterday as well. People don't want to have multifaceted answers. They want one answer. They want you to say, yes, do this. No, do that. They don't want you to say, well, yes, do this if and or. They just want a yes. And that's part of the problem with people. They're like sheep. But our audience is not. Our audience, we have critical thinkers out there. They don't take everything we say, oh, that's what I have to do. And that's why Adele has to deliver information sometimes with an and, if, or, but type of a statement. And I would say to you, beware of people who say, this is the absolute way to do this. This is the absolute way to supplement. You need to eat this way. You need to do this. Because those are the people you need to run from, because nothing is 100% in science. Nothing. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick it up. You're listening to the Supversity Science Roundup. Visit Supversity.com today. Supversity. We'll be right back.
Be dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Summer is here. You need help quick. You need the 21-Day Beachbody Challenge from 21DayFit.com. Want muscle? Want chiseled abs? Want to feel great about your body? Then go to 21DayFit.com today and get the results you want in 21 days. From body of work icon Sean Phillips to you, this results-driven 21-minute program for 21 days gives you foolproof success, and it's free. Go to 21dayfit.com and start today, and your abs are on the way. That's the number 21dayfit.com, and download the Summer Supercharger immediately.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
You already know how great the Testo 100 Transdermal Testosterone Boosting Patch is. Well, now it's even better. The new and improved Testo 100 patch now contains D-aspartic acid, stinging nettle root, and androstenotrione to increase free testosterone while reducing sex hormone binding globulin and aromatase enzyme. It's still made in FDA-certified labs and contains all the great ingredients that made it work originally. But now it's even better. Bypassing the stomach to deliver its ingredients throughout the day for greater increases in energy energy, libido, and muscle-building, fat-burning effects. Get 50% off when you use the coupon code SHR4. Go to AGEFORCE.com and use the coupon code SHR4 and get your new Testo 100 patch today.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio, the Subversity Science Roundup. Okay, and to prove the point that we just said, during the break I was talking to Adele, and he said, you know, Carl, it's very unfair what you just did. There's a chance that some people out there may know who you're talking about, and this person should have the opportunity to be on the show and face these kind of statements. And he made me feel bad about what I just said about this person. Do you think that I was wrong for saying those things, Adele?
Well, maybe not. That was what you were thinking about, his motives not to come on the show, and that you disagree with his opinion on telomere length. That's all okay, but it's not okay to say it when he cannot counter your arguments, and especially not when you have heard him talk on a radio show. You know how little time we always have. And even I sometimes, when I re-listen to a show, which I didn't do in quite some time, because I often think, oh God, what did you say there? And you did mention this, and you did forget to mention that. And this sounds as you were presenting the one and only solution. This is all problematic, and therefore I wouldn't go I would try to avoid argumentations like that. If he had written a long book, and you could actually go point by point through his argumentation and say, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, that's okay. But in this case, it was maybe a little too hectic or too hasty to comment on it like that.
Okay, and I stand corrected. I make mistakes. I understand that. So maybe I shouldn't have said that. I apologize. And I really hope that this person comes on the show someday. And I would have him address this. And who knows? His opinion may change the way I feel. I'm not immovable. So there you go. I've made my public apology to the unknown person that I'm talking about, just in case somebody knows who I'm talking about. How's that sound? You think that was diplomatic enough?
I think it was, yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to trade. Good. I'm sorry.
A sign of strength.
What's that?
A sign of strength.
Okay.
That,
there you go.
Apologize.
Yeah. No, I've apologized numerous times on the show. It's no big deal. I'm like everybody else. Okay. So with that being the case, let's move on to the next subject, which is an article that was published in Science Daily that when you started digging into it, you found maybe contradictory information?
Well, contradictory, in a way, it's really contradictory, because the way they wrote it up sounds like they had fed mice or rodents different diets. And the result was that the rodents on the high-fat diet would have gained less weight than the rodents on the low-fat diet. And we all know that in rodents and in those studies with high-fat diets in rodents, where the high-fat diet usually is mostly high in energy and high in carbohydrates and high in fat, that this actually is not going to happen. And usually I don't really care about studies like this, but in this case, I had read the particular study 2 weeks ago for a series I'm writing for the Subversity, which is on circadian rhythms. Because actually the topic of the study is not really testing high-fat versus low-fat diets, but was about restricted eating, in a way like intermittent fasting. And the Science Daily article made it sound as if they had put those rodents, on a high-fat diet, and a high-fat diet combined with intermittent fasting. And the result was that the high-fat diet with intermittent fasting produced rodents that were lighter and were healthier than the ones on the low-fat diet with intermittent fasting. But that was clearly not the case, and I really remembered that out of my head, because I had planned on writing about the study in the last installment of the series, and it did not really fit in because the article was already too long, so I cut this part out. And I thought, did I make a mistake there? And went back to the study and looked at it, and I realized that exactly what I had in mind was the correct version, that the rodents on the high-fat diet were obviously not leaner than those on the low-fat diet. They had no statistically significant difference in weight when they were intermittent fasting, but they had more body fat, and for what is particularly striking is that they had much more fat accumulation in the liver than the rodents on the low-fat diet. And remember, again, this is one of the typical rodent high-fat diets, which is really, really energy-dense, most of all. And it's not what most people out there will understand is a high-fat diet in terms of absolutely no carbohydrates or
right.
as little carbohydrates as possible.
And, let's talk about that for a second. I mean, basically, when you do a traditional high-fat diet, it's usually, as you're pointing out, high-protein, high-fat. We know that it shouldn't be high.
No, that's not right. A traditional high-fat diet is absolutely high in fat, because if you want a high-fat diet where you go into ketosis, you can't eat much protein. This will hinder you your switch into ketosis.
Okay, so what you're saying is, in order to trigger ketosis, you also must be low in protein as well.
Yeah, well, low, it depends on how you define low, but in terms of, in bodybuilding terms, you would be pretty low to really go into ketosis.
Okay, so theoretically, if I'm 230 pounds and I'm eating 230 grams of protein a day, and the rest of my calories I'm getting from fat, are you saying that that is too high of a protein intake to truly go into ketosis?
Well, if there was a state that is true ketosis, as you are just using ketone bodies to produce energy, it would certainly be too high. If you ask me if you would be starting to produce ketone bodies as an additional fuel, I would say yes. But if you're consuming 200 grams of protein, no matter what source, but especially if you're also using protein shakes, and I think you would be, you will be running a large amount, you will be producing a large amount of glucose in your liver, and certainly not be running exclusively on ketones. Although you will be spilling them out, and that's actually the reason you will be peeing out even more ketones, because you don't use them. You have glucose. That you are producing from the protein you're ingesting.
So, in other words, in order to truly do the high fat diet, you have to do it the way Kekwick and Pawan did it, and that is to 80% of the caloric intake must be from that macronutrient. So, a high fat diet would mean that you're basically 80% of your diet is fat. Period. End of story. And 20% is whatever else you want to put in there.
That's right. Yeah. Well, best protein, of course. Because if you throw in carbohydrates, you wouldn't have any room for proteins, and you need proteins because you can't make up proteins from fat.
Well, also, isn't it fair to say that if you do a high-fat diet with carbohydrates, there's a totally different thing that takes place, and that is that the body will go to the carbohydrates as an immediate source of fuel and store more of the dietary fat. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, and this is what you actually see in those mice. I think I'm not sure if it were mice or rodents or rats in the study, and it actually doesn't matter. But you see this in all those high-fat rodent studies, where you usually have 60% or around anywhere between 45 and 60% fat and 30% carbohydrates in the diet often. Then they are mostly running on the glucose from the carbohydrates and storing away all the fat they are eating. And in this case, most of the fat really was stored in the liver, and the liver is usually the first place that really got hit by the superfluous fat, because it was superfluous in the sense that the rodents couldn't or didn't even need to expand it when they also got carbohydrates.
Okay, so to summarize the sniff test of this Science Daily article, Science Daily got it wrong, you feel, right?
Well, they gave a completely wrong impression. Of course, you could argue, well, there is the other group, the ad libitum fat rodents. They were, in fact, had a higher body weight than the restricted.
And explain to the listeners what libitum means. It means that they could at will eat whatever they wanted, period, end of story.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Whenever they wanted, whatever they wanted. The other group was restricted. They were fed, I think, once a day at a certain time point, and that was actually what the study was all about. It wasn't really about feeding them high-fat or low-fat diets. It's what it was about, trying to modulate the circadian rhythm and to see what effect this will happen. This will have on the body fat accumulation on a fattening diet, and the fattening diet was a high-fat diet.
Right, right, okay. And we have to go into a commercial break, but I would love to, only because you mentioned in order to eat that high of a protein intake, you would have to be using protein drinks. And you know that I've kind of stirred things up on the show by my admission that I have switched to whole milk protein isolates as opposed to just exclusively whey protein or whey isolates, and my reasoning behind it. I think that you also have some information. I know that you did a couple really good blog posts. Can we talk about that when we come back, and then we'll pick it up with some of the science and the news? Okay. We're talking today with the brilliant and even-handed, very fair. I mean, he pointed out to me that, you know, Carl, I think that was very unfair, and you gotta love a guy who really does this the right way. His website is Supversity, SUPPVERSITY.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Supversity Science Roundup. I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies, and no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan-2, Mechano Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like triptorelin or follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Companies.
No two amino acids have been studied more than creatine and beta-alanine, and no two amino acids have been shown to independently improve athletic performance better than creatine and beta-alanine. When you join these two ergogenic powerhouses together, you get unparalleled results. And when you bypass the stomach and deliver them right to the bloodstream, you get the best single legal performance-enhancing product bar none. Save 50% off your initial order by using the coupon code CB50. That's CB50. Go to ageforce.com today.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. You're listening to the Supversity Science Roundup with Adel Moussa, author of the website Supversity.com, Supversity.com. Okay, Adel, whey protein, whole milk protein, is there really a difference, you think?
Well, of course there's a difference, because if you take make a whey protein out of a whole milk protein, you have to go to several processing steps, and you are always losing something, and you are, in a way, you are losing functionality. On the other hand, you're gaining something for special purposes. For example, the reason that whey protein is all the rage at the moment is that acute muscle protein synthesis studies are all the rage. And if you do a study that measures just that, then whey will always outperform all the other dairy proteins, because you get the greatest amino acid spike in the shortest time period.
But is that not a function of gastric emptying and absorption, and not necessarily just because of the single focused whey protein? Couldn't you do the same thing with an amount of micellar casein that would allow for a net portion of it for initial absorption to deliver that requisite 3 grams of leucine? Wouldn't you see the same results?
You could deliver them, but you couldn't deliver them so fast, especially not with a micellar casein. You could have a calcium caseinate, which is actually, you can make a hydrolyzed, just like a whey protein hydrolyzed of those, and they are digested in the exact same rate, and they will produce the exact same anabolic response. So although they have a slightly different amino acid composition, I think they are even slightly lower in leucine. And this, the response is equal if you have a huge amount or huge bolus of those. But the interesting thing about those micellar caseins is that they form, you could say, clumps in your digestive tract. And this is also why they are digesting so slowly, or they are delivering their amino acid load slower than whey proteins. And if you look at milk or whole milk protein, then you always have micellar casein and also whey proteins in them. And in essence, that's already nature's way of combining them in a single supplement, you could say, for us to grow, or for us humans and for all animals to grow. And what's quite interesting is, though, that if you look at it from what people often call a evolutionary perspective, and look at the constitution of breast milk, then you will see that over time this is changing. That is, the ratios of whey proteins to casein is changing when the infant is growing older. And if I'm recalling correctly, the ratio in general is already higher. There's more whey protein in human breast milk than in the milk of cows, and compared to casein. And then it's slowly the casein content is increased as the child matures. On the other hand, I'm not quite sure if this is maybe also a function of the selection process we've had with our cows for quite different reasons, because maybe the cows which produce a milk that is higher in casein produce more milk, or maybe it also depends on what we are feeding them. So there are so many influence variables that I'm not quite sure how representative that is. But,
let me ask you a question and just kind of take it in a different direction. I suspect that the constant use, the chronic use of whey protein and even whey protein isolate over long periods of time can actually predispose someone to become hyperinsulinemic. What are your thoughts on this? Part of the reason that I've switched to whole milk protein isolates, which in cow's milk I think is an 80-20 micellar casein to whey isolate or whey protein. My reasoning is, I'm not going to precipitate that insulin spike, that rapid gluconeogenesis effect that's going to raise blood sugar levels. Am I wrong about that, or do you think that there's some logic in this this constant pounding with whey protein all the time, 3, 4, 5 times a day for some people, is actually eliciting a much unnecessarily high response by the pancreas?
It's certainly initiating a high response by the pancreas, and that's actually quite an intriguing effect, because my personal opinion is rather that your liver can hardly keep up with the rate of gluconeogenesis that is necessary, especially if you don't eat at least a regular amount of carbohydrates in your diet and still ingest all those whey proteins. Because whenever that's actually the magic of whey proteins, and that's also why mainstream medical science is interested in whey, because it is good for diabetics,
right?
Because it causes this insulin spike and thus helps them clear much of the unwanted blood sugar from their bloodstream. And on the other hand, if you have someone who is training maybe 5, 6 times a day, he is certainly not somebody who will have high blood sugar issues. On the other hand, the insulin response from the onsurge of amino acids, which can also be reproduced if you ingest similar amounts of free-form amino acids, although it must be said that those are often not as fast delivered as
the whey protein,
as, for example, some of those peptide products you can also buy.
Oh, okay.
Whenever you do this, you get these insulin spikes, and you will actually force your body to compensate for that in order to have your blood sugar stabilized, because otherwise you would go hypoglycemic and simply pass out in the worst case scenario. And I'm not sure if you would become insulin resistant, because the real insulin resistance that ensues from type 2 diabetes is not what we have, or at least it appears at the moment that it's not the pancreatic burnout in the terms of your pancreas has produced X amounts of insulin, and that's all it can produce in one lifetime. But it's rather the damage it takes when the blood sugar is high always. And if for someone who is living on whey only, the blood sugar won't be high, because the liver is already doing overwork, or is already overworking to just keep it at a normal level. And therefore, I'm not sure whether you get hyperinsulinemic, but I can tell for sure that I've heard from many people, and I've been there myself, that you get low blood sugar issues and low energy states, and can also really suffer. Your intellectual capacity and, of course, your workout capacity can actually really suffer when you're living on fast-acting whey proteins and don't eat additional carbohydrates in your diet.
Well, is it? But can it be said that the reason for that is because of this rapid clearing of sugar, concomitant with the inability to produce rapid supplies of sugar, because you're waiting for gluconeogenesis to produce it, and so you have this push and pull that occurs at the same time, right?
Exactly, you have this push and pull, but that's not really the reason you would develop insulin resistance. That's another syndrome.
Well, no. I never said insulin resistance. I said increased insulin production. I there's emerging research out there that shows that insulin itself, it could be damaging to the body in the absence of high blood sugar levels. And so you don't want insulin spikes. I mean, the ideal thing would to have stable blood sugar and virtually small amounts of insulin pulsing throughout the day. That would be the optimal thing. And I suspect that hyperinsulinemia does not necessarily beget insulin resistance. As you point out, in a hard training person, in certain characteristics, you're not going to become insulin resistant, but you are producing more insulin as a result specifically of this one this one ingredient in your diet than you would without it. And I think that is shown in the diabetic who has a whey protein drink with a meal and produces more insulin in response to that whey protein drink as opposed to just the meal, which we both know about that research.
Yeah, it certainly is. And there are actually studies which compared cow's milk protein and whole milk protein, whey proteins, and really confirmed this concept that the faster or the greater the influx of amino acids and the greater the hyperaminoacidemia, the greater the insulin response will be. And in the end, the question is still, is it how important is it that you don't get those spikes? And I feel that it's particularly important for someone who will otherwise always be running around with almost low blood sugar. And there has only recently been a study published which investigated exactly the effects of this, because in that case your sympathetic nervous system is in full alert mode 24/7.
Right.
It needs to get the blood sugar up. And one of the things it does is obviously the catecholamine increase, that is epinephrine.
Adrenal hormones, right?
The adrenal hormones are the second defense line, exactly. And my personal take on this is also that many of the people out there who are currently complaining of central fatigue syndrome, which is actually it's a non-existent entity, it's something very nondescript, a nondescript collection of symptoms, that many of them are going there because they are, A, training too hard and putting their body under a lot of stress, not recovering enough, often not eating enough, and then they are also following a diet that does not provide them with readily available energy, but too much of the energy in a form that has to be converted first. And this is oftentimes protein. And it's really difficult for this is also a reason why you don't get fat as easily on protein, because it's difficult for your body to produce so much of readily available and storable energy of protein in a short time span that whenever it is produced, it's almost used already, unless you're overeating hilariously.
Well, you know, and we have to take a break, but I just want to mention this. When I started doing research into Parkinson's disease many, many years ago, a couple of the studies I came across were working on the supposition that due to insulin resistance in the brain, specifically in the substantia nigra, that the lack of usable glucose in that area of the brain caused a situation akin to your car overheating because the fuel is getting too lean and it's trying to run on vapors. And this process was, they were trying to state that this could be the reason for neuronal damage in this region of the brain. And this in and of itself, regardless of the reason for the lack of usable glucose in the brain, their hypothesis was this situational insulin resistance in this particular area is precipitated by the lack of usable glucose, which also can occur from periodic and regular chronic episodes of hypoglycemia.
Of course.
So
people underestimate the risks that go hand in hand with hypoglycemia. And if you always switch from a hypoglycemic state to a
hyper,
quote-unquote normal state or even hyperglycemic state, this is actually what really damages the pancreas, and this is also what really makes it fat.
Yes, which leads me back why I'm using whole milk protein, because I just don't want the insulin spikes. I may not be getting the protein synthetic response that I can from whey protein exclusively, but for what my agenda is at 54 years old, which is to continue to get stronger, be healthy, and try to avoid the things that I believe personally, which is, I'm unaccredited and minimal education, but to me, I don't want to precipitate insulin spikes any more than I want glucose spikes. And so that's the reason why I've adjusted my intake of exclusively whey and moved to a whole milk protein isolate. We have to take a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick it up and we're going to move to some science in the news, where Adele Musa provides the Subversity Sniff Test. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Summer
is here. You need help quick. You need the 21-Day Beachbody Challenge from 21dayfit.com. Want muscle? Want chiseled abs? Want to feel great about your body? Then go to 21dayfit.com today and get the results you want in 21 days. From body of work icon Sean Phillips to you, this results-driven 21-minute program for 21 days gives you foolproof success, and it's free. Go to 21dayfit.com and start today, and your abs are on the way. That's the number 21dayfit.com, and download the Summer Supercharger immediately.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro Series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro Series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro Series products today at primordialperformance.com.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
The cornerstone of longevity medicine is preserving or improving telomere length by increasing telomerase. Telomeres are the repair kit for your DNA. Maintaining DNA integrity is an important factor in staying young and disease-free. If you're like me, a telomerase activator isn't optional, it's a necessity. The only clinically proven telomerase activator in the world is TA65. That's why I take TA65 every day, and you should too. You can learn more about TA65 by visiting tasciences.com. That's tasciences.com.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Subversity Science Roundup. Adele, was Nirvana a popular group in Germany?
Well, I think about, among certain subgroups, yeah, but not so much as in the US, I believe.
Okay, just curious.
Everybody knows Kurt Cobain, and everybody knows the story behind Nirvana, but maybe I'm also somewhat too young, don't know, or from the wrong family. I'm not sure, but at least in my humble opinion, they were not that big in Germany as elsewhere.
Okay, that's good. Just curious. Okay, so what is in the news right now? What science is in the news right now, Adele, that you've had to apply the Subversity sniff test to?
Well, the sniff test. I think we've covered one of the sniff tests already before.
Okay.
So maybe I will just get to a few other interesting bits and pieces.
Yes.
And what I found really exciting, and I think that's also important for people to realize, is that we are really making progress in terms of designing medications, and in this case, This was an aromatase inhibitor. That is a molecule that will bind to the human aromatase enzyme and thus prevent the conversion of testosterone to estrogen. And those are not only important for men who overproduce estrogen in some cases, especially people who are overweight often have this issue because this enzyme is highly expressed in adipose tissue. But it's also, of course, important for women. And actually, they were invented for women to treat breast cancer. And some of them have quite nasty side effects, and others do not really work the way scientists want them to work. And as of late, there has been a study published where scientists are finally starting to build those molecules from scratch. That is, they look at the structure they would have to bind to the aromatase enzyme and just build those molecules like you would build them out of Lego blocks.
Wow.
And see how that works. And I think that this is one of the most exciting developments because hitherto we have always been looking around in nature and trying to identify a certain molecule and then synthesize it or make a synthetic copy of it. And oftentimes the copy was not as good as the natural compound, which already had side effects we did not want to have. Some of them we could reduce, other new ones were added. But in this case, and especially when it comes to those enzymatic cascades, we still don't really understand. It's quite impressive and important to approach it this way and look how they function on a molecular level, that is, how they bind to each other or how they bind to hormones and change their structure and to just mimic those molecules. That was one of the studies that was released in the last 7 days I found particularly interesting. And another one I posted on my on the Subversity Facebook wall, and I just reiterated some of the things from the past week to look what was in the news, actually, because sometimes I tend to forget what really is the most exciting stuff. And I found this one quite intriguing, but I suspect when you post something on a Facebook wall, you always have, I think, 255 or I don't know how many letters, and then the whole thing breaks up. And I reposted a study I came across in the magazine Vaccination or Vaccine. And this is a magazine I didn't really know about before, but I realized that they are publishing tons and tons of data on different vaccines and how they work. And it's quite interesting to look through the archive. But this one was a very new one. It was on the MMR vaccine, which is the vaccine with 23-year history for measles, mumps, and rubella virus. And this study found that the vaccine is perfectly safe and it works extraordinarily well. And this was the first part everybody could see on my Facebook wall. And usually I have at least one like for everything I post there, but this post didn't get a single like. And therefore I just looked at it again and realized that you had to click on see more to get to the real important part, or what I considered the important part, and where I wrote from the disclosure part of the paper without further comment, and then I started another citation where it says, the authors would like to thank John Steck for Merck, and Margaret Burroughs, also from Merck, for their editorial support. And then it goes on, funding for this research was provided by Merck, Sharp, Dome Corporation, and a subsidiary of Merck and Co. And it goes on with financial disclosure. All authors, except for Dr. So-and-so, are employees of Merck. Sharp, yeah. Dome, and employees of this Merck subsidiary company. And this is actually what we've talked about in, I think it was the first show where you called in, where you were first alone in the studio of the second one, I don't really know. In the end, I'm not criticizing the scientists or saying that the study is flawed, because this is actually what we've been talking about, that we need those follow-up studies 32 years later to look, is it really that productive as we have thought?
Right.
But in this case, you really see that it's highly problematic that those studies are done by the same companies which are still producing the vaccine. And even if they weren't, the U.S. is, at least from a German standpoint out, we often think of the U.S. as the the nation of litigation.
Huh.
And here in Germany, it's very difficult to get some recompensation, even if it's quite obvious that you got hurt. In the U.S., you get $1 million when you just pull out a cup of hot coffee on your lap, and it didn't have the danger hot on it. And therefore, it's quite obvious to see that when the companies have to do those follow-ups, they really can't afford to say, well, there's a certain problem. It could be that even if it's just one person, that this one person got hurt by our medication. And that's not just the case for vaccines. And again, I'm not saying that this vaccine doesn't work or that it was dangerous. I'm just pointing with the finger at the system, which is intrinsically flawed. If you ask the person, that's like if I would not collect a paper when I write a test in the university and I collect the papers at the end, it would be like I'm not collecting the papers and correcting them, but I'm just leaving the correction to the student. I couldn't do this, obviously.
Right.
But this is the system, or this is how the system works at the moment.
Yeah, and it's very, very frustrating. It really, really is. And that's why it's so important to know where research is coming from before you just buy into it. And that's, again, come full circle to what I said at the beginning of this segment. You know, doing the hard work and reading the research quite often shows you that the press release is incorrect, or at least in some ways omitting information that would make everything different. So it's good that you point that out. And now you know that Bill Gates will be monitoring you, because apparently he is monitoring any anti-vaccine rhetoric on the internet right now, supposedly. I read somewhere.
Could be, yeah.
All right, let's talk about one other thing real quick, if we can. Yesterday, I think it was yesterday, you posted a study that showed that increases in orgasms, orgasms increase leukocyte production and some immune-boosting effects. And I said, wow, if we could find more research that shows the benefits of sex and orgasms, the guys out there would love us, because then they'd be able to go to their wives or their girlfriends and say, look, honey, I need sex. It's healthy for me. Did you find anything worthwhile when you were digging around?
Well, there were a couple of things, but it's actually quite – I was astonished that it's difficult to really find studies that really dig into this. But one thing I found astonishing, for example, is that you always hear how much calories having sex would burn. And the usual estimate you find on the internet is about 150 to 200 calories per half an hour or 40 minutes. But even that is too much, because this is stuff you find on those 10 facts about sex you need to know pages.
Right.
And if you really try to dig it up in some scientific papers, you will find that they are usually not measuring this in calories directly, but in metabolic equivalents. And then it's like walking at 2 or 3 miles per hour on a treadmill. That is about the amount of calories you will burn. So it's not like you could be able to lose significant amounts of weight just doing this. But I think that most people will realize that having sexual intercourse has a certain tranquilizer effect. And this is actually something that is pretty well researched, because it relates to the buildup of dopamine before the orgasm and the release of prolactin right after. And the prolactin, or at least the switch from the excited dopamine state to this calm prolactin state, which, by the way, also helps build the connection between men and women, or between the partners, let's say that, this is actually something that is biologically entrained in us, and it also makes us sleep better. And this is something that has really been studied a lot. And quite related to that is also that there is some connection to histamines. So there is one study that appears to suggest that having sex can help with nasal congestion, especially if it's allergic, while others are arguing that the exact opposite could be the case. So as we have talked about at the beginning, there are often two different different opinions. And if you're looking at research where not too many people are working in, you often have two authors with diametrically opposed opinions, and you really can't make up which is now going to happen or which one of the two is right. And for women, it may be interesting that after the sexual intercourse, after the prolactin surge is diminishing, there's usually an increase in estrogen, which has been in conjunction with actually with the sweat you produce during sexual intercourse, been linked to improvements in the quality of your skin. So maybe this would be an argument for the boyfriends and husbands in order to convince their girlfriend that would be a good idea.
I can see the emergence of you know what Bikram yoga is, right, in Germany? You know what?
Yeah.
I mean?
Oh yeah.
I can see the emergence of Bikram sex sessions, so that you get a good sweat
in combination. Yeah.
Yeah. Get a good sweat going. You know. Interestingly, there was a study that we talked about on the air several months ago that showed that men who had frequent orgasms in their early years and later years had some sort of protection against benign prosthetic hypertrophy and or prostate cancer.
Yeah,
that the orgasms somehow bulletproofs the prostate.
Well, in a way, there is also science that argues that it bulletproofs also the female sex organs, because in the seminal vesicle or what is transported
the plumbing.
Yeah, exactly. It contains pro-inflammatory compounds, and now this is something really important that I will always see people mistaking inflammatory and oxidative products, because oxidation is what happens first, and inflammation is like the firefighters coming in. Inflammation is basically just the immune system calling the macrophages and other immune cells in. And the interesting thing is that by containing these inflammatory compounds, the seminal fluid actually recruits the police or the firefighters in advance to prepare, or at least that is the argumentation of the scientists, to prepare the female sexual organs
Are you talking about you're talking about the ovaries and the cervix,
yeah,
and all those
exactly.
parts. Okay.
When you're talking about the prostate and how orgasms keep the prostate clean, the same fluid will go through there and will also help call the good guys, because inflammation is not always bad. As long as it's controlled and the immune cells are doing their job, it's a good thing. So this could actually be factoring in there.
And interestingly, when we talked about this on the show once before, I had gotten numerous emails from guys saying, how many orgasms, you know, should I be shooting for every week? And no pun intended. I just realized I said shooting for, and I didn't respond because I didn't know what to say. But on the air, I'm going to say, I think we should use the old adage that made the apple so popular. Instead of an apple a day, we'll keep the doctor away. How about an orgasm a day? We'll keep the doctor away. But most importantly, to you guys out there, make sure that your partner's orgasming too, because quite often women need a little bit more work to get them there, but they need all the health benefits as well.
Yeah, and there's a story about Marilyn Monroe, who's supposed to have said that with all the men she's had, she had never had an orgasm in her life. And this is actually a topic which is quite well studied, that many women are either having problems getting an orgasm, or that a certain amount never had an orgasm in their lives. And I've collected some data on that, and they're actually... this is from different studies, and this one is a 2005 study where they tried to find out if this is genetics, and they studied twin pairs, and from those twins there were actually around about 10 to 15% who said that they never in their whole life experienced an orgasm, especially not during sexual intercourse. Interestingly, some of them had an orgasm when they were masturbating. And this actually for almost all of the, I think it were about 2,000 women who were questioned for this study, it really turned out that masturbation was the best method for a woman to get an orgasm, much better than with a partner, for many at least.
I would argue the reason for that is that women require a great deal more delicacy in the form of intimacy, and quite often they have certain hang-ups about their bodies or hang-ups about how they look during sex, and it causes them to have difficulty making the connection with the orgasm, and that's why when they're by themselves with their eyes closed and no one is watching them and they're not watching anybody else, they have a greater degree of intimacy for that moment, even though it sounds contrary. How can you be intimate when no one else is there? But what that says to me is, you guys out there who have a partner like that, you need to pay attention to more intimacy with that person. You need to work on it, making that person feel more comfortable while you're there as opposed to when you're not there.
Yeah, of course. I think it's not a mistake on our part or in the man's part, but it's just not knowing better.
Yes.
Because it's quite obvious that we can't really know what our partner wants if she's not telling us. And this is still a matter. I don't know. It's in the U.S., but it's even although the U.S. always think the Europeans would be so fast forward with sex and all that, it's something even partners. Or not, at least many partners don't really talk about. People are frustrated, but they don't talk about being frustrated.
Right.
And if you don't tell your partner how what you like and what you don't like, he maybe would want to do it right, but he's always doing it wrong. If you don't complain, what can you do? And I think a major problem today, especially for the younger folks, is how sex is portrayed on the one hand in the mass media and especially also on the internet, in those, well, I should say, shady places on the internet.
Right, right.
This is the one perspective you get, and you think this is how it's supposed to be. And on the other hand, you really don't know what to do, but you have all those expectations, and you don't have somebody really to talk about that. And This usually ends up in trouble and frustration, and it's quite interesting. I've mentioned before that it's important for everyone to talk about science topics with others, and I'm in a Facebook group that's called Hybro Paleo, and it's not only about paleo, and that's actually why I like the group. And we've been discussing this problem that especially younger adolescents are exposed to so much sexuality in television and so on, because it was in the news as of late, that they are really insecure about themselves. And that comes back to what you said before, that if you're insecure about yourself and you're not feeling comfortable, it's quite unsurprising that you won't have an orgasm.
And really, you know, I've talked about this on the show before. You know, libido and sexuality has become a parlor trick or subject of conversation at a bar. But you have to understand that as an organism, we have one goal in life, and that is to procreate and then clear off the planet. And your libido, your desire, and your satisfaction with your sex life, in my humble opinion, once again, unaccredited guy, gets it wrong quite often, is not only a perfect gauge of where you are health-wise, but may actually be the kind of thing where, well, you know, you got to prime the pump sometimes, or, you know, smile to be happy, or happy to be smiling. I think that if you practice good sex, I think it adds to longevity. I really, really believe this. I think it's one of those situations that the more orgasms you have, the more your body goes, wow, we are still able to reproduce. We want to stick around. There may be another opportunity for a baby. And that goes hand in hand with HRT, in my opinion. You know, these are all hormonal messengers that say, you're still on this side of the hill. You're not on the other side of the hill yet. What do you think about that, Adele?
True, true. And there's also this flawed idea that, for example, people with a heart failure can't have sex because it would be dangerous. And there are studies out there that show the exact opposite. The risk of a recurrent heart disease or recurrent heart attack, and especially a fatal one, decreases with the amount of sex you have on a weekly basis. And it's the highest for those who have sex just once a month and the lowest for those who have at least two times a week sexual intercourse
well,
with their
and it's
significant other.
Interesting that you say this, and we had no plans on talking about this, but you were kind enough to send me a book about heart failure, because I've come to the conclusion that, you know, if you do everything right in your life and you don't get a disease, you will eventually run out of heartbeats and you'll just die of heart failure. So my interest in heart failure for my own personal reasons and so on has become very in-depth. And Adele was kind enough to send me a really great book that I had printed so I can read it. Interestingly enough, numerous studies in this book, which is exclusively about heart failure, point out that chronic exercise can change a pathological heart into a physiological heart. What I mean by that is the changes in your heart, when they're pathological, they're bad. You're developing a problem that's going to probably lead to your death. Physiological changes are in response to exercise and healthy changes in the heart, and that means the heart has been upgraded. Well, guess what? When they take rats that have pathological hearts, let's say when you have a chronically high IGF-1, like in acromegaly, the heart goes from that beautiful shape that it has to a round shape like a cherry. And this type of heart has lots of problems with valves and sinuses, and it doesn't beat right and usually leads to death in those individuals. Well, chronic exercise, taking a rat that has those pathological changes in the heart and dropping it in a pool and forcing it to swim for its life for up to 4 weeks. When they look at the rats, poor rats had to be killed, obviously. Their hearts went back to the way they should have been. Yet no doctor is telling anybody who has heart failure, okay, start out walking around the house, work your way into walking around the neighborhood, work your way into a periodic jog. No one's talking about the fact that chronic exercise can reverse pathologies in the heart. Isn't that amazing, Adele?
Well, fortunately, it is changing. And as of late, there have also been quite a few studies on doing high-intensity interval training for former heart disease patients. And even within 6 to 8 weeks after their operation in the emergency room. And always the outcome was that it was beneficial as long as the load was appropriate. So this is nothing you can do like a weekend warrior on your own. But you will have to do within a set scenario where you're closely controlled. And high-intensity exercise for someone who has just had a heart disease could be the treadmill running at 3 to 5 miles I mentioned before, or having sex with a significant other.
There you go.
Has the same energy consumption.
And my vote is sex. My vote is sex. My vote is sex. I want to say it again. My vote is have sex. That's it. That's the best part.
Of course. And it is... conclusively, it has been conclusively shown that as long as you carefully monitor this, you have higher survival rates with exercise than with the old paradigm of, oh, you must be careful, you can't even do anything, at best you shut yourself down at home and close the curtains and get vitamin D deficient at the same time, don't get out because you could hurt yourself, don't overexert yourself. Don't do anything. Just be patient and wait for death to come.
Yeah.
Things are changing these days, and I think that's quite an exciting thing because we are more and more researchers are not just jumping onto the do exercise wagon in the terms of do light intensity exercise, but also on the bandwagon of do versatile and also intense types of exercise and combine strength training, high intensity intermittent interval training, and also do your regular light intensity workouts, which are in effect compared to the other stuff then more of a regenerative means within your exercise regimen. And this does not only go for people who have hurt themselves, but also for any professional athlete. You won't find any sprinter. Usually you hear that the argument, you want to look like a sprinter, you need to train like a sprinter.
Right.
And guys who are telling you that, they wouldn't even touch a treadmill or go jogging because they feel or they are afraid they would lose muscle. But look at the training regimen of a sprinter. Of course he does. He jogs and he is running at lower paces. He's not just doing his sprints all day long.
Okay, we've come to the end of the, and you know what? I can do 2 hours of this dialogue because this is really interesting stuff where we just kind of go from science issue to science issue, and Del Musso makes this all possible by being very, very fair and balanced about his moderation and discussion about science. The website is Supversity, SUPPVERSITY.com, the single best blog on the internet. Adele, I know we had more to talk about. We're going to have to cover it next week, I guess, or something breaking will happen then. I just want to thank you so much for taking time to come on the air today.
It's always fun with you, and I hope people enjoy the show as much as I do, because I enjoy it very much.
And I hope you guys out there start having a lot more sex, and now that you know that it's healthy. Come on, get busy. It's part of the anti-aging prescription. Get to sleep, train hard, eat right, have sex. There you go. All right, Adele, see you next week, brother.
Bye.
Okay. And so you've endured another, actually, 2.5 hours of Superhuman Radio. I want to thank you for listening. Today is Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday. Tomorrow I am joined by the lovely and talented Elisa Profumo as we do Casual Friday. See you tomorrow.
We're ripped and we're ready.